University Forum is a presentation of Nebraska Wesleyan University, which brings speakers and performers to the campus throughout the semester to lecture on a variety of topics. The opinions expressed by the speakers do not necessarily represent the opinions of Nebraska Wesleyan University or of this station. Today, University Forum features Paul Badura Skoda, pianist and feature performer from Vienna, Austria, with his lecture, Performing Mozart Concerti. Playing Nebraska Wesleyan's Bösendorfer Imperial Grand Piano, Badura Skoda will speak about the knowledge needed to perform and compose cadenzas for Mozart's concerti. Badura Skoda currently holds a distinguished teaching position at the Hochschule für Musik in Vienna. He's been a musical partner with major musical talents David Oistrakh, Wilhelm Furtwängler, Josef Krips, Karl Böhm, Hans Knappertsbusch, Hermann Scherchen, Arthur Rudzinski, Lauren Mazel, George Sell, Sir Charles McCarris, Sir Georg Schulte, and Herbert von Karajan. His vast repertoire includes over 30 concerti and hundreds of solo and chamber works representing every style of piano composition. He writes for the purpose of expanding his knowledge of compositional styles and fully understanding the composer's intention. Interpreting Mozart on the Keyboard, a book he co-authored with his wife, Dr. Eva Badura Skoda, has been translated into 6 languages.
Well, thank you for coming here again, and I guess that a few of you have heard me playing last night. I must say it's a pretty busy schedule, and it's not easy to, after such a day like yesterday, where I taught 3.5 hours in the morning, I had no less than 10 very gifted young performers, and after a rather unusual performance. So it's not too easy to be here again and to give you a sort of a lecture. Don't expect too much. It's about performing Mozart concerti, and I understand that one half or so of my appearance is also scheduled for questions and answers. So many thoughts when you speak about Mozart concerti. We all know how great a genius Mozart was, and we are really struck by the quality and the beauty of all his piano concertos. One of the greatest Mozart scholars was Alfred Einstein. Einstein was a cousin of the great physicist and mathematician Einstein, Albert Einstein, who I think is a known name everybody knows. Now that cousin was a little less known, but he made the second last edition of the so-called Köchel catalog. Köchel was a man in the 19th century who painstakingly collected every possible evidence about the works Mozart had written and put them into a catalog which arrived at the number of 626 works. His last work, of course, was his unfinished Requiem Mass. And in the Köchel catalog are listed 28 piano concertos. But in fact, Mozart wrote a little more than that, because under the number K107 are listed, if I'm not mistaken, 3 or 4 different piano concertos under one number. And it's a bit difficult to understand. On the other hand, he listed as number 28 a concert rondo in D major, which actually was not a separate work, but was written as an alternative last movement to his first great piano concerto in D major, K175. And lately, another concerto movement hitherto unknown came to light, another rondo for piano and orchestra in A major, with Kirche number 386, which had been believed to be unfinished. And about 5 years ago, another great Mozart scholar, Tyson, discovered the last six missing pages in a place in the British Library. He was searching for manuscripts of Mozart's student Süssmayr, and suddenly he saw among the papers of Süssmayr Mozart's handwriting, and immediately Alan Tyson recognized it for what it was. So we have one more work, which makes it, I give it up, but I think Mozart wrote, in fact, not, you'd now say 28, 29 piano concertos, but a little less, because his first six or seven concerti are actually not of his own invention. They are arrangements of sonatas and chamber music by other composers, including Bach's son, Christian Bach, which he only scored for orchestra. So we would call them today transcriptions. Now, the first question is, of course, why did Mozart write so many concerti? Beethoven wrote five piano concerti, and I think that's pretty much. And if I could write only one concerto like Mozart did, I would be happy for the rest of my life. So why then? Well, at that time, the attitude towards new performances was a little different from today's. And whenever Mozart performed in public, he was expected to present a new concerto. It would have been considered laziness on his part had he played the same concerto more than twice. So in the year of the peak of his success in Vienna, which was between, or we can perhaps say 1.5 years, it started in 1784 and went to the very end of 85, perhaps the beginning of 86, Mozart performed on his piano no less than 20 times. And indeed, in this period, he wrote the greatest part of his piano concertos. Other works he wrote on commission. Of course, other people, particularly his students, mostly ladies, asked for a concerto, so he wrote this concerto for Barbara Ployer and that concerto for Miss Paradis, Paradise, a nice name, and a few others on commission, like the wonderful concerto number 9, the concerto called the Jeune Homme concerto. Jeune Homme was the name of a apparently very, very good and young woman pianist who commissioned his 9th concerto, K271, in E-flat, which still is one of the most original and one of the most creative concerti, which also finishes, as we might say, his first period of writing great works. After that concerto, which was the climax, the absolute climax, and is still considered one of his greatest concertos, never surpassed, but many times equaled by his later works. After that, he let his pen rest and wrote other works. So, in this peak of success, he wrote, I think, about 12 or so concertos. It's incredible. And also incredible is the speed with which he could compose and write. The sheer amount of writing Mozart did, thousands of pages of music, and very often revisions, or sometimes transcriptions of the works of other composers. The sheer amount is just staggering, and we cannot possibly understand how a man, even a man of genius could do as much. He wrote the concerto which follows the one I played last night, the 21st concerto. He wrote in no more than 3 weeks' time. In a month, 3 weeks' time would have kept him busy if he had done nothing but writing that concerto, K-467, also known under the name, and I always was Elvira, what is it?
Madigan.
Concerto. He, in the same time while he was writing this, he went to parties, he gave many piano and composition lessons, he wrote arias for singers, he was busy completing his score for Figaro. So we have no idea what enormous work Mozart could fulfill, and yet he gained so very, very little recognition. The mystery of his life, and one of the greatest mysteries in history, is that after this enormous success of performing, I think, more than 20 times in Vienna and always to full houses, suddenly the interest dropped nearly from 1 week to the other, and no explanation, no satisfactory explanation was ever given. Certainly there must have been intrigues, and there must have been a lot of calumny, and certainly people must have been saying very bad things about him, but only saying them, they were never in writing. So we are really struck by the mystery. And after this great series of concertos, which I've just mentioned, which finishes with a concerto in C major, K-503, his most majestic work, a superb work, which was just finished in December of 85, I believe. I hope I'm not wrong. It might be 86. Let's hope it was 85. You can check it. After that, he wrote only three more concertos. They were beautiful works, but we could consider them something like afterthoughts. He had really done his work. And to only give you an imagination of how pathetic his situation became, a few years after all, he lived nearly 6 years longer than this success, he tried to revive his success by announcing he would give another performance in Vienna and play again in public. He not only performed piano concertos, he conducted, he accompanied violinists or singer, and he was particularly famous for making fantasies, improvising on the spot, sometimes on a given melody, on a given tune, which was a guarantee that this had not been prepared at home, but he could really do it immediately. To this occasion we owe many of his great variation movements. Mostly when he improvised, he used the form of variation. So, what happened? He announced a concert, much in the way we would do it today. The only difference being that instead of a ticket sale at box office, tickets were sold by subscription. And what happened in such a case, you published in various spots in Vienna and of course in the newspaper the prospected date for a performance, and those who wanted to subscribe gave their names, wrote it in a list, and if the list was large enough, then of course the concert took place, and these people had with their signature promised to buy tickets for the performance. Tickets were about, in comparison to living standards, more or less the same price as today. And what happened in this one instance is really uncanny. How many subscribers do you think he would have had even if success was dwindling? Can any one of you make an estimate? Anyone? Well, how much would you say? I mean, let's say in his peak of lifetime, Horace was small, he must have had something like 500 subscribers or more. So how much would he have if his success wasn't doing so well? Well, name any number, anyone. There was one subscriber. And that subscriber, honor be to him, was Baron van Swieten, the only one music lover who still held steadfast. I need not tell you that the concert was cancelled. So I was very much luckier than Mozart, and I feel it's unjust. I would rather play for one subscriber and have Mozart have my audience of yesterday. Now, to give you an idea how Mozart created his works, of course, he must have written them in feverish haste. And the remarkable thing is his mind and his pen was so utterly clear that when you see the manuscript of the concerto in D minor, you are really surprised by its absolute neatness. There is no sign of hurry in it or of badly written passages. Every note is in its place, and I assure you there are many thousands of them. You can count them if you like. They are printed here. So I made an edition of it, and I think I just read you a little bit of how this concerto was created, and this will lead into the actual topic, performing them, because so far I was only giving you a sort of lecture on the concerti. The first performance of this, the most dramatic of all the Mozart concertos, on February 11, 1785, at the Mehlgrube in Vienna, must have been an exciting occasion. Mozart's father, Leopold, who had arrived in Vienna only a few hours earlier, and this sounds very familiar, remember it was February, traveling in snow and ice and on an absolutely ghastly road, sent the following report to Salzburg in a letter written to Mozart's sister, Nannau. The same Friday evening, we went at 6 o'clock to his first subscription concert, where there was a great gathering of select public. The concert was incomparable, the orchestra excellent. Apart from the symphonies, a singer from the Italian theater sang two arias. Then came a new excellent piano concerto by Wolfgang, which the copyist was still copying when we arrived. That means a few hours prior to the performance, not to the rehearsal. And your brother did not even have the time to play through the rondo, which is the last movement, as he had to supervise the copying. You can easily imagine that I met many acquaintances there and that they all came up to me. Playing the last movement of this concerto at sight might prove difficult even for the best orchestras of today. I see some of the players here, I'm sure you will agree. The fact that the performances, now this is unquote, I mean the letter is over, the fact that these performances failed to break down in evidence is evidence of the high degree of proficiency among orchestral musicians of the period, as well as of efficiency of Mozart, who probably gave some vigorous support to the tutti passages in directing the works from the piano. We can assume that Haydn, the other great composer of this time, was one of the acquaintances present at the first performance. Spending the following evening as guest at the Mozarts, he said to Leopold, I tell you before God, as an honest man, your son is the greatest among the composers known to me by name and person. He has good taste and furthermore the greatest knowledge of composition. Presumably, these works of praise did not just refer to these three new string quartets played at that occasion, but also to the concerto heard the previous day. During that period, Mozart had no peace, not even after this first performance. Only 2 days later, he played another piano concerto, probably the one in B-flat, K456, in the Academy, that means in the subscription concerto, of the singer Luisa Lasky, who later sang the part of the Countess in the first performance of Figaro. 2 days after that, he repeated the performance of the great new concerto in D minor in the subscription of the singer Elisabeth Distler at the Burgtheater. Magnifique, that means magnificent, according to Leopold Mozart, referring apparently to the composition as well as to the performance. In spite of the hectic nature of these events, the autograph of the full score, which is in Vienna, shows no sign of haste. However, the fact that Mozart was overworked during these early months of 1785 may account for his omitting to write down his cadenzas, as he did in the case of most of the other concertos. It is a loss for which not even the cadenzas Beethoven wrote for this work are consolation. Beethoven belonged to another world, and only the first of his cadenzas can be regarded as being stylistically of value. This sounds a bit harsh, a judgment, but you can hear Beethoven's cadenza practically in every performance which is recorded. And if you have an independent judgment and if you are not overawed by the name Beethoven, you will see that his cadenza to the last movement is unfortunately not a great piece of music. I have to say, in his defense, he never meant it for publication. He wrote it down like an improvisation, and probably he would have been aghast had he known that every performer 150 years later would play nothing but his own cadenza. A very good cadenza to the last movement was written by my friend Alfred Brendel, one of the very few who does not play Beethoven's cadenza to the last movement. My cadenza, incidentally, is also not by Beethoven. So, let's see. Now we come already to some things about the performance. But that is too technical, what I wrote here. It is most interesting, though, that Mozart had a so-called pedal piano, which was put under his piano, and which was a little longer, where he could, with his feet, like on an organ, produce very low notes. And in fact, he made use of that in this very concerto. There is a passage in the first movement which is unplayable for a normal pianist unless you make a very good use of your legs. But I'm not that much of a virtuoso that I dare to do it, so these notes are usually left out. I'd like to show you that. And now we are in the middle of performance, aren't we? But please forgive me if I play wrong notes. I didn't practice it that way. It is right after the first entry. Oh dear, and this one. I have all these little transmitters here. Yeah. Yes. But there is a passage which goes so at the end of the first solo. Now it's interesting that here the only bass line apart from the piano are the timpanis, timpani which played. timpani. So, what Mozart wrote was this. Thank you. Yeah, you know, if I were an ape, a gorilla or a chimpanzee, I might do easier. So here we have a definite proof that these notes were played on a pedal keyboard. And this, of course, brings in many other questions. But let's it be enough with that. Now, performance of Mozart concertos. As I have already mentioned, what you consider today an exception and something some like an extra show was the normal procedure. That means there was no conductor standing near the piano, but the composer, pianist, was his own conductor. And we can imagine in such a case it would be impossible actually to have another conductor, because the work, the score was not in existence until a few hours prior to the performance, so the conductor could not know which tempi were meant and so on. However, the conducting was not made in the way I did it yesterday, because naturally the habit of playing with performers had changed so much. But the conducting was actually done in the old pre-classical fashion by continual playing. That means in a Mozart concerto, and this is rather recent knowledge, the pianist, and in fact this is even more recent knowledge, even in some of the Beethoven concerti, the soloist played together with the cello and the bass and furnished chords, played very rhythmically, that helped the orchestra to find its way. So he didn't get up, but he was sitting very much the same way. And for example, in this concerto, which starts now, I'm playing the orchestral part. Reduction. But I have to play it, so to give you an idea how the concerto was conducted. Certainly he must have given a cue, like in chamber music, and then instead of playing everything, he just furnished the beats and the harmony. And later on, playing this way, he doesn't actually make wave his arms and not shake his head, but it's quite clearly understood. Today, of course, when this is performed, people perform acrobatic acts, getting up and making movements. I was one of the same, but why? Because the orchestras are not used to this type of playing, and they were just playing. I'm afraid the orchestra might have fallen apart. What do you mean? So I did it more out of necessity and not as a part of show business. Now, this art of continual playing, of course, has very much changed our attitude towards Mozart concerti. And particularly when we play on so-called period pianos, on original or replicas of the forte pianos of his time, this sounds very, very good. The piano is an integrated part of the orchestra and sounds not unlike the harpsichord which you hear in a Bach concerto or in a Bach overture or in a Handel concerto and so on. It had a silvery, beautiful, clear tone, not loud, but very crisp and with a great definition, particularly in rhythmical terms, and a great clarity in the bass. So, therefore, the concerto, there was the emphasis on the word con, that means with. The piano was considered, and this was the original intention, as a part of the orchestra, and gradually this primus inter pares, the first among equals, and gradually he made himself independent by playing the soli, playing here 8 bars and there 20 bars, and returning again to the orchestra. So the modern conception that it's a sort like a box fight, who can play louder, you or I, was totally absent from the performance. During the tutti, the piano integrated, that means it was hardly heard, it was only heard because of its rhythmical impact, and during the soli, it played very much in the same fashion as it played today. And this, of course, makes for the whole structure of a Mozart concerto. Mozart's concerti, all of them, are a sort of enlarged chamber music. There is the joy, again, very different. The modern conception is the orchestra gives harmonies, gives a background, and the soloist just shows how loud and, of course, how fast he can play. Part of it, of course, was also in the concerto. Sometimes there was a real challenge and the orchestra played a loud chord and the piano came. You certainly heard some of these passages as well. But most of the time, they were integrated. They were sharing the pleasure or the drama of a performance. So I've been trying to revive this continual playing, but I didn't do it last night. But in other concertos I've done it, both in performance and in recordings. And I'm somewhat surprised that even so-called historical or historically oriented performances do not give us this pleasure. They still play in the 19th century tradition. That means tutti plays without the soloist, and then comes the solo, and then comes the tutti, and then the solo, which in a way is a distortion. But this is not so important. Actually, it doesn't make much difference whether you hear now and then a chord during the tutti. Sometimes I did it yesterday, not too much, or whether you don't hear it. Of course, what is essential, though, is that a person who attempts to play a Mozart concerto well should be advised not to use only 2 piano scores, but full scores. It is not difficult at all to read the piano part from a full score. Too small for you to see here. There are also larger scores available. And he should study not only his piano part, but he should be aware what every instrument plays and see also where the piano has the leading part and where the piano only accompanies the other instruments. There are many places where the piano is not the first, but only the accompanist to orchestra instruments. There are beautiful passages in the D minor concerto that confirm that. For example, in the second movement, there's a beautiful place where the orchestra plays. What do they play, actually? Yeah, they play. It's beautiful. Everything Mozart writes is so beautiful. I repeat it. While the orchestra is playing this, the pianist has nothing but harmonies. So a pianist who is not aware that here the melody is not in his... But and I try now to play together... who does not know that, he hasn't seen this score, might think now it's my big solo, and he might... He might kill the melody. So this is one little aspect of performance practice. I remember my first Mozart concerto I studied, I must have been 9, or perhaps 10 years old. At that time, I did not know what a concerto was, I didn't know what an orchestra was, I just studied the score which had been given to me by my piano teacher, and I found it, on one hand, very difficult, on the other hand, very rewarding because of these beautiful melodies which are in it. Now, another important fact in Mozart is that everything Mozart writes is important, is significant, and is melody. And a danger is, of course, a concerto is, of course, not only melody, it is always virtuosity, and Mozart really challenges the player of his time to the greatest virtuosity possible. That means there are passages which are indeed hard to perform and which show dexterity, change of registers and all these very fast runs which challenge any player of his period as well as of modern periods. But what we should have in mind is even the so-called passages are still melodies, and I consider them just melodies played a little faster. So one misconception is that we play certain themes beautifully with expression, and then when the passages come, we just rattle off the passages and do not treat them as melodies. The first great pianist, certainly a person who made history in interpretation, to do not so was Arthur Schnabel. A man remembered as a teacher, as a performer, and particularly as one who made many recordings. He was the first ever to record the complete Beethoven sonatas some 60 years ago. Now, about Schnabel, it was said, it's strange, he does not only play the themes beautifully, he even plays the passages as if they were beautiful. And we have a good example I'd like to quote from this concerto in the continuation of the opening theme. But first let's consider the theme as such. In a Mozart concerto, in any composition by Mozart, one of the main problems is that we have so few notes under our fingers. And that means... every note, every of these few notes is charged with emotion, with meaning, with beauty, And if we give only one wrong accent, then we can spoil the whole thing. Let's see how the solo grows out of the piano. It continues now. Now comes the passage worker. Remember, this is the place where you should play. Now, what it would be wrong to play with expression. Interest. No, you have to give it the same inflections as if it were played at half the speed. Now the same thing. It's all melody. Gold. Now, this compare this to a typical entrance of another concerto. You will see how more difficult this is. You see, just one voice, not even accompaniment. Now, see, we go a little further, and let's play Chopin. Relatively few notes as yet, but still it's easier because you have this wonderful sound. Here's a pedal. But what about this? You feel like being stripped of everything which makes piano playing easy. So what you have to be aware is the inflections, and they come, of course, from singing, you know. You could put, and that's what I'm doing all the time when I play Mozart. I try to invent words which would fit both rhythmically and emotionally under such phrasing. And indeed, the style of it is what we call recitativo. It's this opening could very well be the opening of a great aria in an opera. And so you might put in the words, "My heart is broken. My heart is broken." So I show you only some of the pitfalls which might happen if you are not good. For example, you might play one note too loud. And suddenly the music doesn't speak anymore because of the wrong declamation. You don't say, "My heart is broken." My heart is broken. This formula is very important. Most people play. It's very difficult to get this. Or they play. But you don't say broken, you say broken. And when I have this formula, I'm always thinking. means these notes should be well put together, melting into one single melody. But not only the melody is there. Yes.
I feel terrible.
Is the time over?
Today's guest on University Forum has been pianist Paul Badura Skoda. His topic was performing Mozart concerti. This has been University Forum, a presentation of Nebraska Wesleyan University. Nebraska Wesleyan is a private undergraduate liberal arts college located in Lincoln, Nebraska. Approximately 1,300 students are enrolled in more than 40 major programs.